Anyway, talking about boa constrictors, as you described them, being top dog or whatever it was you said, what about the top bear? Because polar bears, Niall, okay, a few interesting facts there. Higher up the food chain than we are. Did you know that, the polar bears, they've no natural predators? I suppose man would be a natural predator.
Well, the other way around.
How can they say that they're higher up the food chain?
I've seen that they believe it's the only animal on the planet that has evolved to hunt humans as a source of prey. They would, the only one that would actually stalk and track humans. You get animals sometimes like tigers, which will go for a human if they have the opportunity, if they're hungry enough. The polar bears actively seek humans out, along with seals. So that's something.
So that's why they're higher up the food chain. They're the largest carnivore on land.
On land, yeah.
They're a big animal, there's no doubt about it. And technically, they're marine mammals at the same time.
They're very good at swimming, and they really rely on that to swim between ice floes. They're very highly adapted for life in the far north, not the south. You don't get them in Antarctica, you get them in the north. And they range all across the northern parts of Europe, Asia, and North America. Very successful species within their niche. They have it to themselves. But of course, climate change is now threatening them. They're one of the flagship species for the destructive effects of climate change on wildlife.
Anyway, why are we talking about polar bears?
Well, we're talking about polar bears because a wonderful study has just been published by a PhD candidate in Trinity's School of Chemistry called Julian Carolan. And it's all about, why do polar bears not get ice and snow stuck to their fur? When you see them on all the nature documentaries, they're pristine, even though they're in this environment where it's really cold and there's ice and snow forming everywhere. It doesn't stick to their fur. And he thought, well, why is that the case? And he's come up with some very interesting conclusions. Julian, polar bears are remarkable creatures. They're supremely adapted for life in very inhospitable environments, both on land and at sea. And when I say on land, I also mean, of course, in ice. They live in very frigid, very challenging conditions. Your research has uncovered or revealed some very interesting aspects of how they cope with those conditions. Could you tell me a bit more, please?
Yeah. So we decided to look at polar bears as they've got this remarkable ability to get in and out of water, to roll around in snow and ice, to study why doesn't ice stick to them. We'd spoken to some specialists in Norway who track polar bears as part of the Norwegian Polar Institute's policy of looking after the bear population. And they had said they noticed this property where you never see ice on polar bears, despite the fact that they're so well insulated, they're so cold on the outside. If you look at them under heat imaging, you'll see that they are almost invisible, apart from their nose and their paws. So they're very cold, they're snow temperature on the outside, but you never see any ice or snow on them. So we decided to look at why this is a certain property, because it's a very valuable thing to understand. You know, if you think of ice forming in fridges or on airplanes, wind turbines, it'd be amazing if you could minimize that. So we looked to the polar bears for inspiration.
And it really is very inspiring. Meeting you face to face, you can see now that I myself am relatively follically challenged. So I never had much of an experience of having ice forming in my hair, or so I thought. The coldest temperature I think I've ever experienced myself was once in northern Russia when it got down to minus 30 Celsius at night, and I had the very strange experience of the moisture in my breath freezing inside my nose on my nose hairs. It's very disconcerting. And so obviously I didn't possess that same sort of strategy or evolutionary strategy that the polar bears have. How do they do it? What is it about their fur that means that ice just will not form?
So, yeah, because polar bears have a very interesting fur to begin with. They're well known for having hollow hairs. So we thought originally, maybe this is a property. They've got these interesting structure to the hairs, and this might be an aspect that stops the ice sticking to them. But when we studied the hairs, we just took a simple sample of hairs and we stuck ice to it and we pushed it off, and you measured how hard it is to push it off. And we found it was quite low. It was sort of in the threshold, low enough that we could call it ice phobic. So we went, okay, that's interesting. But when we looked at the hairs, they looked like any other mammal hair. They looked like my hairs under the microscope, except polar bear hairs are thicker because it's a more rough and tumble environment than living in Dublin, I guess. But what was interesting then was we thought, okay, well, what about the hair oils? Because they stank. The polar bear hairs smelled terrible. So we stripped them all away. We washed them off with a very simple soap. And suddenly the ice stuck very strongly. So the secret wasn't in anything to do with the structure of the hairs, but actually in the oils they excrete that are very different to what other mammals would excrete. And that was kind of the secret ingredient.
So they literally have some sort of oils or sebum or something within that that's excreted from their skin, I presume, onto their fur that's creating this unpleasant smell, but also is making these de-icing properties.
Yeah, that's it. So once we stripped it away, you suddenly see that ice sticks about 3 or 4 times stronger. So there is that significant increase. And what was interesting is, as a comparison, I used to have quite long hair. It's short now. I became the alternative mammal sample and had to let my own hair go very greasy and oily, and did the same sort of tests, oily Julian hair and non-oily Julian hair. And we measured how well I stuck to it. And we found that regardless of my hair oil state, no matter how long I went without washing, the ice still stuck very strongly to my hair. So there wasn't the same property. So there are unique parts to polar bear hair oil, polar bear sebum, that means the ice doesn't stick to them. So from this, we conducted a collaborative study looking at hair oils. That's not so much my specialty, but we determined what the components are, because sebum is a very complex mixture. You need to have it moisturize your skin, protect you from bacteria. It needs to fulfill a whole lot of different aspects. But then we identified a couple of really interesting components, and we took those and we went on into simulations, and we looked at, in a simulated aspect, how well do they stick to ice? And we found that three or four of these components do really well as the fluoro compounds you'd typically use to get rid of ice, which is a really exciting result, because those chemicals, although really effective, are really bad for the environment. So it represents a really exciting opportunity to replace those with something less environmentally damaging.
I know that you looked at some other animals that would live in very cold conditions, particularly aquatic animals, because the polar bear is largely an aquatic animal itself in many respects. I know you looked at sea otters and you found out that, like with human hair, like with many other animals, they have a present, it's squalene, is that the name of the chemical, which is absent from polar bear hair. What sort of role do you think that plays in this?
So squalene's really interesting. It's common to very few animals or very few mammals. Humans have it in large amounts. But then the only other mammals it's been found in are ones that live in aquatic or wet environments. So you highlighted the otter, but there's also the sea lion, there is the mole. So all things where maybe you have to get some friction, get some grip on it, on a wet ground. The polar bear doesn't have it, despite, like the otter, entering and leaving water. So we thought that was really interesting. But what we found was squalene sticks really strongly to ice. So if it had it, then you would suddenly see the ice stick with a much greater strength. The same how it stuck very strongly to my hair. And even if you just take pure squalene and we put it on a slide and we stuck ice to it and it stuck really strongly, despite the fact it's a lubricating layer of oil, you'd think this is, it should do something pretty effective for getting rid of ice. But no, it sticks really strongly. So it seems in some of those mammals, like the otter, it might give them a kind of a friction, a grip as they get in and out of the water. But the polar bear doesn't want that, because you'd end up with large tracts of ice sticking to the polar bear. And then suddenly you'd have that ice buildup that the polar bear really needs to avoid.
And presumably, therefore, for animals like the sea otter and the sea lions, where they're doing their predation in the water itself, there's no risk of the ice really sticking to them the way it would for a polar bear, which is largely doing its hunting on land or on ice floes.
Yes, and polar bears, you know, they'll roll around in the snow and things like that. That's actually often how they get rid of the water, is they'll roll around in the snow and shake it off. And if you're rolling around in the snow and it's going to stick and freeze, then suddenly you have that ice buildup. So it's a very different environment.
I know another very interesting property of polar bear hair is how silent it is, how little noise it makes, which again, maybe, I suppose, the lack of that kind of friction that you would hear with other things. As a bird watcher and naturalist myself, I often have a problem if I'm out in the rain and I'm wearing my rain trousers, this swishing sound and everything can hear you coming. It's not like that for polar bears.
No, not at all. So it seems to be this low friction property, this lack of sticking, allows them to sneak up very well on seals. It was an interesting kind of side topic that I ended up researching into. Seals have really good hearing in and out of water, so it is kind of hard to get a jump on them. But the polar bear, because it's not sticking to the ice, it's not creating that friction, you aren't going to see that same noise making effect. And what's really interesting is then we looked into how Inuits would use the different hair samples, and they knew this property. They knew unwashed polar bear fur didn't stick to ice and was also really quiet, so they'd use it for things like hunting stools, so where they'd kind of place a rifle or something and slide it across the snow and get the jump on the seal, or the sandals they'd wear while doing the hunting activities. So they knew this property and they made sure not to wash the hair oils off to keep that property in place.
So they were very familiar with this. They knew what your research has confirmed. I think it's fascinating. It also suggests that there could be a lot of commercial applications for these amazing properties of polar bear fur.
Yeah, they're hugely exciting because, like I said earlier, we compared it with these fluoroalkanes. They're well known as forever chemicals. They're quite nasty, but they are really effective at stopping ice sticking to them. They're often used in things like ski waxes. You put them on your ski and you slide downhill much faster. But once they get into the environment, they don't break down because of those fluoro compounds. They're just not very environmentally friendly. They stay there forever, like many of the things that end up in the environment. I mean, you don't want that. Whereas if you replace it with a natural oil, like you'd get from this, bacteria will break that down eventually over time. It's just fats, really. So instead of having a forever chemical in the compound, you have something that naturally breaks down. And that's really advantageous.
And of course, it also leads to perhaps ideas for other technologies, novel solutions, as you said, to things like ice on the wings of airplanes, and also to things maybe sporting equipment like snowboards and skis and so on as well. Reducing the friction and reducing the ability of ice to stick, I can see lots of applications.
Oh, it seems hugely advantageous. And I personally would love to try get it onto skis and practice skiing and get my own chance to go down the slopes on some polar bear wax.
I've only tried skiing a couple of times myself. I have a terrible sense of balance. So the increased friction might have been a problem, but also I could definitely have used something to stop that ice and snow sticking to me, to my clothes when I was doing that. I can definitely see the advantages of this. It really is remarkable how this has evolved in polar bears over what, in evolutionary terms, is a relatively short period of time. It's a relatively recent species in evolutionary terms.
Yeah, so we weren't able to maybe look into as much of an evolutionary study. We didn't get other bear samples, its closest relatives being black and brown bears today. So it would be really interesting to see, is this something that is common to all of those bear species? Because they are, as you said, very recently evolved from black bears. But at the same time, there's also the dietary differences. A lot of the oils we looked at were very fatty, very long chain oils, the kind of things you would get from a diet of eating seals. So there is a lot more to look into this. We might see it in black bears. There might be different hair oils, but there might be a commonality because of the common evolution. But there might also be a difference between captive bears and bears in the wild. We worked with wild Norwegian bears that were hairs were collected as part of their normal tracking protocol. But you might see in a zoo where they're not eating things as fatty as a seal, but more so just fish and things. Maybe you don't see the same hair oil composition.
Of course, in a zoo environment, they wouldn't need the same degree. They're not hunting and stalking their prey. They're not exposed to such cold temperatures, one would think. So from that point of view, it makes sense. And I wonder how much of this is controlled by the actual temperature around them. If a polar bear is kept in a warmer environment, which may be uncomfortable for it, does it actually produce the same hair compounds?
Yeah, it's very interesting because having gone into all this background study, what I'd seen before I started any of this was that people often said polar bear hairs were porous. They have these micropores in the hairs. And they said that was for some kind of insulation. But what was interesting is you only ever see these pores in captive bears. We didn't see them at all in ours. I looked at many, many of our hairs from about 6 different bears, and you never see these pores. And when you look into it, there's this sort of effect of some polar bears in zoos of greening. So they'll turn quite a green color and it looks quite unhealthy. But that effect is where algae and water gets into the hairs, and then you get this kind of algal bloom and you end up with sort of green patches on polar bears. But that's not common to wild bears. So there's already differences you can see between wild and captive bears. So this could be another effect that you see in the difference.
I know that polar bears have a reputation for being a very difficult and perhaps in many cases inappropriate animal to keep in captivity. And maybe that's one of the reasons why. Their biology is so attuned to living in extreme cold environments in the far north that in our more temperate latitudes, regardless of the amount of food they're getting, it's just not right for them.
No, it's probably not. And you probably see in quite a few Arctic animals where things that would not normally happen in the wild, where maybe they start shedding or other aspects just because the temperatures are so different, the diet's so different. You know, instead of swimming long distances, they're not swimming long distances anymore. So suddenly you're seeing huge changes.
And of course, in many ways in nature, that is being replicated now because of the effects of things like climate change, especially climate change, where we're seeing that the available habitat for polar bears and for their prey being diminished, and other bear species and other predators being able to encroach upon that. We're seeing like grizzly bears, brown bears moving further north, even hybridization happening with polar bears. How much of a threat do you think that will pose to an animal that's so evolved for life in those environments? And as that advantage perhaps decreases, does that mean they're at risk of competition from other species?
There is, yeah. I would say polar bears are definitely starting to come further south, but also, yeah, predators are going, or other bears are going further north. So you're going to see hybridization. You're going to see sort of significant differences in the bear population of the future. It will be difficult for them. I will say, as sort of a good note, when I spoke to the guys in the Norwegian Polar Institute, they've got bigger polar bear numbers than ever up there.
Okay.
So it's not all bad news when it comes to the bears, but you know, when a significant population is in Canada and whatnot, it's still sort of up to debate.
And your research, absolutely fascinating. Are there now any more questions that you've uncovered that you want answers to? What's next?
I would love to. We've looked at penguins from a similar point of view, which is a very different kind of anti-icing mechanism. They've been much better studied, the penguins, but there's a really interesting structure. It's very close-knit, close-hatch. You end up with these kind of hooks, these hamuli, that hook onto each other. You end up with this kind of crisscross structure. And instead of it being an oil that stops ice from sticking to penguins, suddenly you see it's very structural. So that's very exciting. And then I'm hoping that maybe you can marry these two things together. You take these penguin structures with the polar bear hair oils, and suddenly you've got really effective technology for stopping ice. So that's the one thing I'm really excited at.
I love that about nature and evolution. Like, two completely unrelated groups of animals in completely opposite parts of the world have evolved two completely different strategies to solve the similar problem. It's amazing how that happens.
Yeah. And I mean, this is the first Arctic mammal that anyone studied for why ice doesn't stick to them. But all these different mammals have been used by Inuits, indigenous people of the Arctic, for a long period of time. You think of wolverines, you think of caribou, reindeer, bearded seals, other animals like that. They have been used. They seem to have effective anti-icing properties, but they could be very different. So we could pull different ideas, and all it takes is a couple of hairs. You don't have to be harvesting bears or anything like that. You just need to grab one or two hairs and look at them structurally, because you could see some significant changes, and maybe you can marry different properties for different applications.
I'm interested as well now. You just sparked something in my mind about some of those mammals, and birds indeed, that change colour throughout the year depending on the environment around them. So from mammal point of view, things like the mountain hare and the Arctic hare, the stoat in more northern latitudes where they'll turn white in the winter, not here in Ireland, our stoats don't. And on birds like the ptarmigan, a type of grouse, which is brownish-grey in the summer, but then the winter turns almost pure white. I wonder also if their feathers slash fur on those animals, if they also change their properties to maybe more effective for repelling ice or snow, who knows?
Yeah, there could be other aspects, changes in rigidity. So you might have a less flexible one in the winter where maybe it's more bouncy and the hairs bounce off. That was kind of some of the speculation around how reindeers work, because obviously they're non-meat eating, so they're not going to have a fatty diet like that. You're not going to see the hair oils. So there's going to be significant changes, and then even how the diet changes from one season to the other. As the color changes, you might see a lot of change. So it would be for a really interesting study over the course of the year.
Julian, absolutely fascinating. I can't wait to see what's next. This has actually opened my eyes and my mind to a whole new area of biology and of physics. I think it's fascinating what can be found out. It also shows how different disciplines in science can complement each other beautifully. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Fascinating stuff, I have to say, Niall, and it just goes to show you the wonderful research being carried out by Irish scientists at home and abroad. More details on the website rte.ie/Mooney.